All right, good afternoon. Actually, it is afternoon somewhere. I'm an East Coast guy, so it is afternoon. My name's Steve Smith. I'm a professor at Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute and scientific director at the Translational Research Institute in Orlando, and provide scientific service to the American Diabetes Association through the Research Grant Review Committee. It's a pleasure to be here today and to moderate this morning's press briefing about the SCWAT study, which examined how exercise can train fat to be good fat, which in turn benefits other. Our goal for this symposium is today, Friday, June 21st at 4:15 p.m. Central. And joining us today is Dr. Lori Goodyear, to my immediate right, Jocelyn Section Head, Senior Investigator and Associate Professor at Harvard Medical School. And on the left-hand side, Dr. Kristen Stanford, postdoctoral fellow at Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. As you will soon hear, the SCWAT study examined the impact of exercise in mice and humans on fat in the body and found that exercise can train fat to behave differently than the type of fat that develops from sedentary behavior. Before the beginning of the presentations, I do want to let you know that we are audio taping this briefing and have some journalists attending this press briefing over the phone. For that reason, I would like to remind our presenters that it will be important to speak into the microphone so that the journalist on the phone can hear you and your comments. For the journalists on the phone, if you have questions that you would like to ask of our presenters, please let the operator know by pressing star 1 on the telephone keypad. As time permits, we will do our best to address your questions during this session. And as a final housekeeping note, we will entertain questions and answers after the presenters have finished speaking. It's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker today for this press briefing. Dr. Lori Goodyear is the Joslin Section Head, Senior Investigator, and Associate Professor at Harvard Medical School. And important for our conversation today, she and her lab are recipients of ADA research grant funding, which comes from the largesse of the ADA organization and its constituent members. Dr. Goodyear.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here today to tell you a little bit about our work and then hopefully answer some questions. So I think everyone now is well aware that there is huge increases in the rates of type 2 diabetes throughout the world. And while there's been a great deal of emphasis on the fact that this is due to the fact that people eat lots of high-fat food, I would argue that, in fact, the lack of exercise is just as important or maybe even more important than the increase in high-fat feeding and increased caloric consumption. And we know that inactivity is a major factor leading to increased rates of type 2 diabetes. And we also know that physical exercise is essential in the treatment and prevention of type 2 diabetes. So most of the research in this area has really focused on how is it that exercise or exercise training, repeated bouts of exercise over weeks, months, or years can affect skeletal muscle. And there are certainly many, many adaptations that occur in skeletal muscle, and we think that the muscle, the changes in the muscle are very important to what happens to blood sugar levels, blood glucose levels, et cetera. But the more we've thought about it recently is that exercise doesn't just affect muscle, it doesn't just affect heart. It actually affects all sorts of, and probably every tissue in the body. There's more and more research now suggesting that there are beneficial effects on multiple tissues throughout the body. And our laboratory recently has become very interested in trying to understand what happens to adipose tissue, what happens to fat when a person or an animal trains. So just very briefly, to talk about white adipose tissue, which is what I'm going to focus on today. White adipose tissue exists in two major forms in the body. There's visceral adipose tissue, which is the adipose tissue that is surrounding the internal organs. And having a lot of visceral adipose tissue is linked to insulin resistance, cardiovascular disease, stroke, which then can also lead to diabetes. But we also have subcutaneous adipose tissue, or adipose tissue that's found underneath the skin. And a predisposition for accumulating this type of adipose tissue as opposed to the visceral adipose tissue is more linked to the ability to be more sensitive to the actions of insulin, which obviously is a good thing. So the study that we looked at was to really, first off, and what I'll talk about, is what are the effects of exercise training on white adipose tissue? And we did these studies in both mice and humans. So for the mouse studies, how do we do these types of studies? Well, for this particular study, we had a group of mice that were sedentary. So they were just housed in individual cages. This was done for a period of 11 days. And then we had another group of mice that were housed in wheel cages. And you can see by the amount of exercise that they do about 8 kilometers of exercise per day, which is about 4.5 to 5 miles a day. So a tremendous amount of exercise. The mice just love to move and to run. Then after 11 days, what we did was we really focused for this study, and what I'll tell you about today is we took this subcutaneous adipose tissue, the tissue that's underneath the skin, and we studied it to see what are the adaptations that occur, or are there adaptations. And so this is some histology, or looking at the cells from comparing the subcutaneous adipose tissue from a sedentary mouse and a trained mouse. And what you can immediately see is that the cells are much smaller. There's less lipid, there's less fat in the cells. What you can't completely see is that these cells actually have more mitochondria, and they also have what we call multilocular cells. And this is what we often refer to as browning of fat, making the fat more metabolically active. So it's very clear that you don't need a lot of exercise. It's 11 days of exercise in the mouse to cause these really dramatic, you can just visually see it right here, adaptations to this subcutaneous adipose tissue. So to further understand what's happening to the adipose tissue, we did microarray studies where we looked at all the genes in the mouse adipose tissue. And on the top are the samples from the trained mice, and on the bottom from the sedentary mice. And you can see that this is a heat map of the genes. The higher are in red. The expression of the genes are red if they're higher and lower if they're blue. And you can see there's very clear differences between the trained and the sedentary animals. And in fact, we see that more than 1,800 genes are significantly changed. In addition, we see that a number of different metabolic pathways are changed. So it really shows that in the mouse, we see huge adaptations. And in fact, when we compare some of these data to some of the things that we see in muscle, we actually see more genes changed in the fat than we do in the muscle, which was a huge surprise to us. So we see that in the mouse, that exercise training really changes the adipose tissue. But this is the mouse, and of course we want to see if this is relevant to human subjects as well. So we did an experiment where we collaborated with a group from Copenhagen, and the subjects were 10 males. They were 18 to 40 years of age, and they were not hugely obese. Their BMIs were in normal or a little high normal. And then they trained for 12 weeks at a pretty good rate of exercise, 5 days a week. And this is VO2 max. Some of you may be familiar with this. This is fitness level. And what this just shows is that all the subjects started out at a pretty good level, but they all increased their fitness level as well. So what happened to their fat? Here is the gene array data. We looked at other types of experiments also, and we saw, similar to what we saw in the mouse, we saw that the fat in the humans also responded to the exercise training. So exercise training clearly has very profound effects on subcutaneous fat. It decreases the cell size, it increases the lipid or the fat content, increases the number of mitochondria, and causes this effect that we call browning, or making the fat more metabolically active. So the next aspect of this study, which Dr. Stanford will tell you about, was to see, now we have healthier fat. Is this really contributing to the effects of exercise to improve glucose homeostasis, blood sugar levels, et cetera? So she'll show you a couple slides on these data now.
As Dr. Goodyear said, we were interested to see if exercise training-induced changes in white adipose tissue could affect whole-body glucose homeostasis. And so what we did was we took mice and we put them in real cages and we took their trained subcutaneous adipose tissue and then we actually transplanted it into the visceral cavity, so into the stomach area of sedentary mice, and then measured their serum lipid levels to see if there were any changes in glucose or insulin or circulating lipids. To give you an idea of our transplantation model, we took the same amount of adipose tissue from sedentary and trained mice, and these mice were trained for 11 days, same way we did our microarray studies. We transplanted the tissue into the visceral cavity. We also had a group of surgical controls. Mice had just received the surgery. We then performed glucose tolerance tests after 9 days after the transplantation. So we injected the glucose after 9 days, and what you can see are the black bars are the sham-operated mice. The open boxes are the mice that received subcutaneous adipose tissue from sedentary mice. And what we typically see on a glucose tolerance test is you see that nice peak, and then the glucose slowly clears out of the body. And what we saw when we transplanted trained subcutaneous white adipose tissue was a dramatic improvement in glucose tolerance. So you can see that these mice cleared their glucose much more quickly. And this effect was seen with no effect on body weight or food consumption. So as Dr. Goodyear said in her introduction, we know that the rates of type 2 diabetes are increasing dramatically, and a large part of this is due to diet and increasing obesity and increasing high-fat diets. So we asked, what if we put these mice on a high-fat diet, and could transplantation of subcutaneous adipose tissue from trained mice improve the effects of mice fed a high-fat diet? And what we saw was 9 days post-transplantation, you can see the black circles are the sham-operated mice that were fed a high-fat diet. These mice had been on this diet for approximately 7 weeks, and they have an impaired glucose tolerance, while the red circles are the mice that were also on a high-fat diet over that same time period but received transplanted subcutaneous adipose tissue from trained mice. So this really completely got rid of any effect of the high-fat diet. And even when we compare it to chow-fed mice that were the same age, which are the black boxes, you can see that the transplantation of subcutaneous adipose tissue actually improved even compared to the chow-fed mice. So we can see that transplantation of subcutaneous adipose tissue improves whole-body lipid levels, whole-body metabolism. And in data that I'm not really going to get into today, when we looked at different tissues, we actually see that the transplantation of white adipose tissue from trained mice improves glucose metabolism in the brown adipose tissue and in skeletal muscle. And so our working hypothesis is that the white adipose tissue is producing these various secreted proteins, and those are what are responsible for these improvements in whole-body glucose uptake and specifically tissue glucose uptake in the brown adipose tissue and skeletal muscle, as well as some other tissues. And so exercise really can train your fat. And exercise training has beneficial effects on subcutaneous adipose tissue that contribute to improved systemic glucose homeostasis.
All right, Dr. Goodyear, Dr. Stafford, thank you very much for your very intriguing presentation. We'll, in just a minute, open the table up for question and answer and discussion. Please remember that we're taping. We have a staffer in the back with a microphone who will bring that around. And do we have phone call-ins? No call-ins, so we don't need to worry about that instruction. Raise your hand if you'd like to ask a question. Please remember to state your name and your outlet affiliation, please.
Crystal Fenn with MedPage Today. So they're now doing some work with fecal transplants and things. Are we going to be looking at brown fat transplantations, or do you think you should just stick with the exercise and do it yourself?
Well, I think exercise is very, very important. And while there are certain aspects of exercise that we could mimic. Really doing exercise is the number one way to prevent disease and to, I think, to help alleviate the symptoms of type 2 diabetes. However, I do think that the idea of transplanting more metabolically active cells can help in the long term will probably be a mechanism or a treatment, a potential treatment for at least some aspects of type 2 diabetes. So transplantation of brown adipose tissue, which we didn't really talk about today, also has health, has improves metabolic health, and now we see that exercise-trained adipose tissue also can improve metabolic health.
Other questions from the floor? I had a quick question, if I may, just to maybe spur the conversation a little bit here. Your training study was fairly intense. That was not your go to the gym for 30 minutes and walk on the treadmill. They were really getting after it. How much exercise do you think it's going to end up taking? How much do people need to do to get these health benefits, do you think?
So yes, for the human study, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was a fairly rigorous 5 days a week study. We don't know exactly how much exercise you need in order to have these effects. But I should say that these subjects were pretty fit to start. So my expectation would be that people that are normally sedentary and are not as fit, you probably do not need a huge amount of exercise to begin to have these effects. But those are important studies, and we hope to do some of these types of studies to really understand how much exercise is necessary in order to have these effects.
Other questions from our staff, press staff that are here today? Please.
So do you think this is limited, the effects are limited to duration exercise, or can you also do some just
resistance exercise?
Yes.
I think we definitely that's an interesting aspect to look at, and we could look at that. I think the key part of this is that it's a training experiment, and so it was training over a period of time resulted in these stronger beneficial effects and had more of an effect on the adipose tissue. But it would be interesting to look at resistance training over time to see if that had similar effects.
Yeah, because we know resistance training has effects on glucose homeostasis. It also, you increase your muscle mass and you can help lower blood glucose levels. So I think it will be very important to see whether any of the effects that we see with aerobic type exercise can also occur with resistance exercise training.
Please, follow on.
I probably just missed this, but you said it was for the human study, it was 5 days a week, and how much or what kind? See, you said it was aerobic. How much were they doing exercise-wise?
So they were exercising between 65 and 85% of their VO2 max. It varied on the days of the week that they exercised, and it was done on a cyclergometer, so they were on a bicycle. They actually did a power test at the beginning of each week to kind of reset what their current VO2 max was. So it was adjusted by week so they could be at the appropriate intensity of exercise.
So would you say it was moderate to vigorous exercise?
I would say it was a pretty high intensity
vigorous,
of
okay.
exercise.
And then how long? Like, are we talking like a couple hours or?
I believe the longest was an hour. It was between, okay. I believe, 45 minutes and an hour.
45 minutes to an hour.
Yes.
Once a day.
Once a day for 5 days a week.
5 days. Okay. So some people in the community might be doing that. So it's not
sure.
Like
yes.
Yeah, it's
they
not,
were exercising
it's not they
nonstop.
Were doing,
okay.
Yeah, it's not.
Right,
they
thanks.
Weren't doing four hours a day or something like that.
Behind you, please, here.
Mark Seffin, Diabetes News. Those human training people, they were not diabetic. They were healthy individuals. So would you expect any difference in the results if the people had diabetes?
Well, based on the findings that people with diabetes have beneficial effects on glucose homeostasis, I would expect that they would have similar effects. I would be surprised if there was any inability of the fat to adapt. We know certainly from all the extensive muscle studies that have been done with exercise training in people with diabetes, they can respond normally to adaptations with exercise training. But again, this is the start of this area of research, and so that will be another important question that we would like to address.
Schlabing, Medical Tribune, Germany. The German TULIP study found a large amount of sport non-responders. Do you have any data on non-responders in your study?
We saw that all of these subjects increased their VO2 max at relatively similar percentages. They all increased at least about 10%, so we haven't looked at that population, but that would be another interesting aspect to see if their adipose tissue responded differently.
Helen Heidemann from the Danish Diabetes Association. I just want to, you probably said it already, but to clarify, did I understand it correctly that if that exercise can even out the bad effects of a high-fat diet, that you can, does that mean then that you can eat lots of fat as long as you remember to exercise?
Well, that's a good question. That's what we immediately thought of. Yeah, we can now go eat our hamburgers and exercise. But in the animal models, it was very clear that if, despite the fact that the mice were eating this very high-fat diet, if they had this trained adipose tissue transplanted into them, they did not have any bad effects from the high-fat diet. I would not recommend that for humans. I think that the response may be different in humans, but certainly if you are expending more energy and you're training your muscles, now you're training your fat, you're going to be much better off if you're exercising on a regular basis.
So the scientist at the podium has a question, and I hope the press folks in the room are interested in this, but I'm a curious folk, just like you are. How does the muscle or exercise talk to fat? You talked about this really intriguing idea that fat's making signals that go off and turn on brown fat and do other good things. How does the fat know that it's the muscles are exercising?
I'll let you take this one.
Well, we don't know exactly how the fat is being told that there's exercise going on. Certainly, exercise causes hormonal changes, changes in sympathetic activity, and so whether that is the mechanism that stimulates the fat to respond, we will hopefully be investigating that soon. But I agree with you in terms of there's been a fair amount of research in exercise and diabetes field over the last several years to say that when the muscle contracts, the muscle talks to fat, talks to other tissues, and there's some good evidence for that. But what we're saying now and what we think is happening, that in addition to the muscle talking to other tissues, the fat is also adapting in a way that it is also talking to other tissues. So there's, I think it's not just a matter of one tissue talking to another. I think probably multiple tissues are responding and talking to other tissues to change metabolism.
Very cool.
So, but it would be too early right now to take those talk and the mechanisms behind the talks between adipose tissue and muscles instead of the transplantation of the fat tissue, just target those messengers. Let's call them. It's way too early. Or is it something you are thinking into?
Yeah, we're actually actively doing that right now. We have a list of 215 secreted proteins, and we are actively studying those proteins as potential communicators, if you will, or they're adipokines, or that we're saying there are putative adipokines that are talking to other tissues. So that's a very active part of investigation of this area right now in our lab.
Do we have a follow-up? I'm sorry, did you have a follow-on question here? Okay, thank you. Okay, unless there are any other questions, I think we will adjourn. I'd like to thank you for your attention today and your great questions, and look forward to other press briefings here as the meeting goes on. Thank you very much.